Music like this just makes you want to pick up a chicken and hug it.
Speaking of chickens, hugging chickens, Romy?
I don't think that was my first thought.
How many of your chickens get in your lap and you hug, Romy?
Do you know they even have instructions on how to make chicken diapers? Don't go there. Hey, Romy.
I have seen chicken diapers, but no. The Whitman Plantation does not have diapers on their chickens.
Got too many other behinds to change.
Somebody, did you happen to lose a goat this week, too, maybe?
No, but I knew they were going to find him. For one reason, they had more media coverage than Amber Alerts get.
Hey, somebody called in a little confused. Is the tour Chicken de Coupe, whatever, is that this weekend or next weekend?
It's today. And number two, you take a goat away from its mama that's still nursing, you're going to get so irritated by it.
We got it, Rome.
If he's not Mexican tacos by now, he's going to get returned.
Oh, Gus, Gus.
Taco de Gus.
But yes, if you're interested in doing your own backyard chickens inside city limits, it's vpaaz.org. And the tour is today, and you can still get over there and start. It goes on all day, and it's really a self-guided tour. You just get a map, and you go from one home to the next. And it's all this year. They pick a different neighborhood each time, and it's the downtown Phoenix area around I-10 and where I-17. We're kind of by the fairgrounds.
I never knew what permaculture meant.
Well, it's sustainable
growing without depleting Earth's resources.
You know, permanent.
Permanent culture.
So, you know, landscaping with edibles, using, you know, having backyard chickens and livestock, fish. So aquaculture could be part of that, I suppose.
Ongoing education of Rosie Romero.
Let's get to our callers at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you as we bring Nancy in the conversation.
Before you do, Nima just called. It is next weekend. The tour is next weekend.
Did I say?
You kept saying today. It's next weekend, the 14th.
Today's not the 14th?
No. Oh. There's a mix up.
So if you want to see Nima holding her chicken and petting it, this would be the day to go. Not next weekend.
I should have the gentleman
What's
that called
Nima's
in
address?
Still
Do we have Nima's address?
Next weekend.
baz.org. Thank you. Yes. I apologize.
Romy's just ahead of himself on the calendar, that's all.
All right, let's get into Nancy's backyard and see what we can do with her palms.
Good Wonderful. Morning. Are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Hey, we have, I went down to the garden store and saw that it's Washingtonian sand palm volunteers, a couple, three of those growing in our backyard in the rock. And wondering if those can be transplanted into a place where they're positioned better, and if they'll look like the real, you know, non-volunteer type Washingtonian fan palm when I do put it there. I need some info on it, obviously.
Okay. Well, yes and yes. They are obviously prolific seeders. Uh-huh. And if you have any in the area, you're probably going to end up with lots of seedlings coming up.
Yes.
And they can be transplanted pretty successfully. Palms are one of the easiest things to move that there are. Of course, just make sure you put it in a place where it's going to, you're going to have room. You realize, obviously, you know what you're talking about, that, you know, that they do get 30, 40, 50 feet tall. So make sure that it's in a spot it can get that height without being, you know, blocked or growing into a power line or electrical utility or something like that. But yeah, they're going to be pretty true to seed, and that shouldn't be any issue as far as looking like the parent or the typical Washingtonia robusta or Mexican fan palm.
We appreciate the call and good luck with your planting. When she's doing that, again, this is the perfect time for planting, transplanting. A lot of times, for deciduous ones, we want to wait till they're fully dormant. If someone's out there transplanting maybe something that's going to go dormant, probably still wait off a little bit on that.
Yeah, and actually palms, the hotter the better. They like to be moved and transplanted when it's fairly warm because they're really close to being a grass. You know, and grasses like to be verticut or thinned or, you know, dethatched when it's warm, and they're actively growing and can recover. And palms the same way. So really one of the best times to do palms is when it's warm. Now, if you've got all these seedlings coming up, you probably don't want to let them all, you know, come up anyway, and you're going to dig them up and move them. One thing you could do would be to actually pot it, let it establish itself in a small pot, and then plant it. But getting back to your question, yeah, if you're going to transplant a plant that goes dormant, you know, a deciduous tree like an ash or an elm, or a fruit tree like a peach or a plum, you certainly want to wait until it loses all its leaves. They're the perfect plant to transplant and move because they actually do go dormant enough that in the nurseries we get them in bare root. They have no soil even on them. They just go down a field and dig them, cut them right out of the ground. All the soil comes off. You have a limited amount of root, and then they can be reestablished that way pretty easily.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you're in the snowpack country and you are a gardener, you're probably a greenhouse gardener. Do you guys have any with your cabin in the mountain regions of Arizona? Do y'all, or do you get there and you get as far away from planting and and growing as you possibly can?
Well, a couple of things. You know, we have a little bit limited water. And, you know, even in the mountains in the summertime here, you've got to water some. So you also have a lot of critters that, you know, if you go in our little subdivision, everybody that's got a garden or a fruit tree has got a 10-foot high chain link fence or a hog wire fence around it to keep the deer and the elk from stripping it and eating it. So you got to have to be a little more permanent. And we just don't get up there enough. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you lived there a little more regularly, it would be something that would be fun to do. But yeah, and the other part of it's true, too. When you get up there, I don't want to work.
A lot of people, for them, that's their way to relax. That's what does the gardener do?
I go up and pray that it rains so I can just sit on the porch and watch it rain and listen to the thunder. That's
that's mountain living. Yeah. And those ponderosas sure let off a nice aroma when they're wet.
Yeah, you bet.
You can smell that vanilla without having to stick your nose up into the crest of the bark.
Right.
So if you are in the mountain country or you're visiting there, setting up a greenhouse. I remember going to Nutrioso for years and years and years. Fred Moore had I don't know how you would describe it. There's a hill, and on the south side of the hill, he had this big greenhouse attached to his home with these solar panels, and they were growing all kinds of vegetables, a lot of cherry tomatoes.
The whole south side of his house was a giant greenhouse.
Okay.
Which they circulated
the
heat.
Passive solar heating thing for the house, too.
Yeah, and I mean, so he grew things year-round. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. You'd go in there and smell those fresh strawberries, and you'd go down there and pick his salad. You know, it was great. It was cool. Really cool.
And it's almost, looking at it and doing gardening and setting it up, and Rosie talks about his plant prison. I mean, that was the perfect plant prison.
It was.
It was part of his house, and it probably cost just as much to build that as it did what you need to keep animals out, because anything you grow a plant, there's a lot of other creatures out there that appreciate your hard work and don't like to share your hard work, the fruits of your labor with you.
In the urban setting, it's generally, you know, birds are probably the biggest issue that we have. But when you get up in the mountain communities, they have birds and javelina and deer and elk and, you know, all kinds of things that just love those tender shoots.
And you said birds, like you knew exactly where I was trying to lead this whole conversation to. Harriet and Tucson writes in and says, outside of getting Rosie's chainsaw and cutting down my Texas ebony tree, what can I do to discourage roosting? My whole back patio looks like a big, giant bird latrine.
Well, I've never tried this, but I suppose lighting the tree so that it's not dark might help. Yeah, if you put a nice outdoor light, shine, you know, if it's pretty bright, shining up in the middle of it, and it's nice and bright all night long, might be something to try. You know, there is a product you can, I think you can still get. It's called Tanglefoot. It's sticky, and you have to get up on, you'd have to get up on the limbs and the branches that they're roosting on and smear it on them. And it, you know, they don't like sitting, roosting on it because it's sticky. You know, using, I don't know that using any kind of shiny things would keep that. That might work in the daytime, but when they're roosting at night, you wouldn't get any reflective property from that.
Could you bird net the tree?
Yeah, you could. I mean, I'd rather cut it down than have a big tree with, and I don't know that I'd want to be the guy that had to put bird net in a Texas ebony.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You'd got to get hazard pay if you do that.
Well, the good news is with doves, they're migratory, so it's going to be a temporary thing. Now, you could end up with something else that decides to rest there permanently. There is a, again, this goes back to what you're saying on night. There's a infrared sensor that goes on a sprinkler called a scarecrow, and anytime it detects movement, it gives a little burst of water, and that works great for deterring any kind of animal. So it, depending on what time they come in to roost, if it's still light enough, that would keep them out, and that's about a $50 investment. I would think you can't daisy chain them. So I would think you would need two or three around this tree, just depending on what angle they're coming in from, and you need to get it elevated. That's one option. And then there's Go Away from Bonide that's repels all, that has birds listed. So there's a couple options that you can try. Good luck. But, yeah. But doves are so migratory. When are they going to be gone? And
well, morning doves are not. Morning doves are here all the time. White wings are migratory. So if in it, and most likely the white wings are all gone. So it's probably morning doves, and they may be there. Who knows? But yeah, I don't know. I guess the other thing you could do would be to thin the, open the tree up again. You know, I wouldn't want to be the guy that has to get in there and prune a Texas ebony. But if it was, if it wasn't quite so protective, I mean, what a great place to roost if you were a dove, because nothing's going to get in there and get you if you're in the middle of a Texas ebony tree.
Might be just the place for a cat.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.